When morning comes to Morgantown, the merchants roll their awnings down. The milk trucks make their morning rounds in morning Morgantown. We'll rise up early with the sun to ride the bus.
And you are listening to Health Talk, the first and third Mondays of the month, noon to one here at Kauai Community Radio with our wonderful doctor, Dr. Donna Kaplan. And this show is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Tahiti Nui and Heaven on Earth.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Heaven on Earth starts here. Organically grown, GMO-free vegetable starts available at Hoku Foods in Kapa'a, Kauai Seascapes Nursery in Kalihiwai Ridge, and Saturday Morning Market next to Kauai Mini Golf. More information at heavenonearthstarts@gmail.com.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Good afternoon, Dr. Donna Kaplan.
Good afternoon, Cousin Rich. Great to see you.
Nice to see you. Our guest, Dr. Stephanie Seneff, again.
Fabulous.
Welcome
to be
back.
Here again. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. Thank you, Dr. Seneff, for being here. It's such a treat to have you here, and I'm so glad you're back on the island.
Always my pleasure.
And we're going to have a nice discussion for about a half an hour, and then after, we will be taking calls. So take your notes, and we'll get back to you. So, okay, and what are we chatting about today?
Well, we're gonna talk about the latest research that Dr. Stephanie has been doing. And first, just for people who haven't been introduced to her, she's a senior researcher at MIT. And why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got into the work that you're doing now? You've been really studying glyphosate.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I mean, it started with trying to figure out what was causing the autism epidemic, which I got quite worried about 8 years ago, maybe 9 years ago now. And I was looking systematically at all the different toxic chemicals in the environment that to consider which ones might be causal. And it actually took me several years of studying before I finally thought to look at glyphosate, because glyphosate is the active ingredient in the pervasive herbicide Roundup. And we've been told by its producer, Monsanto, that it's extremely safe to humans, and that's why it's a wonderful herbicide, and it's used extensively on our crops, and we don't need to worry about it. There's very little monitoring. I heard Professor Don Huber speak about glyphosate for 2 hours, and he was an expert. He's an expert on plant physiology and plant pathology. And I nearly fell out of my seat when I heard his talk, because the things that he talked about, the effects that glyphosate has on health, aligned very well with the missing pieces of the puzzle in what I was looking for in terms of autism and the characteristics of autism and to try to find things that were causing exactly those things that glyphosate was causing. So it was a perfect match. And from that moment on, I have spent essentially full time learning everything I can about glyphosate. And it's a really, really interesting molecule with a lot of amazing different divergent problems that it causes in human metabolism and human physiology. It's just really, really, truly amazing how toxic this chemical is to humans, which has been, and so Monsanto either, I don't know whether they are hiding it or whether they didn't do adequate studies and didn't realize. I don't know which one, but it should be banned. Glyphosate should be banned.
And it is the most used in
yes.
the world, right?
In the world, and herbicide. Especially in America, we consume 25% of the world's glyphosate, and we were the ones who really got gung-ho about the glyphosate-resistant crops, and we introduced these about 1996. We started, they seemed to be a wonderful idea that you could grow corn and soy and canola, sugar beets. These are core crops of the processed food industry. And you could just spray from the airplane. You could spray Roundup all over the crop. It wouldn't die. But it would soak it up, and it would get into the food chain. But that didn't matter because it's safe to humans. And so there was a complete disregard of the consequences of this because of our ill-conceived notions that it was safe for humans.
And it just recently came out from the UN that they have determined it to be a possible carcinogen.
Right, the WHO. An article, and then they had a statement which has gotten Monsanto very upset, where mm-hmm. they've changed its status from basically non-carcinogenic to number two, you know, at several different levels. Number one is the worst it can be, but probable carcinogen, which is pretty severe. And other countries are reacting to that very strongly. Sri Lanka has banned glyphosate recently, which is fantastic. El Salvador already had banned glyphosate. And France, I think, or Netherlands has just recently banned it in terms of recreational use for people to use it to kill the weeds in their lawn. So other countries in Europe, I think, are getting concerned about it and trying to make different new regulations to restrict its usage.
I just read an article this morning that in France they are making it so that none of the garden stores can actually sell it to people.
That's
so,
great news.
Yeah,
and I've also been seeing that individual stores, even individual grocery stores, are starting to decide not to sell it. To mm-hmm. stop selling it. So if there's a wave going on, especially in Europe, reacting to this WHO reclassification as type 2 carcinogen.
So let's talk about what you've recently been uncovering with folic acid, right?
Yes, that would be great. And I really only got interested in folic acid over the past 3 months, 3 or 4 months, so it's sort of new, and I'm still working it out, but I'm finding it to be an extremely interesting topic with a lot of depth and a lot of confusion, and also connected to glyphosate. So it's going to be interesting to see if I can explain it to you at a level that's receptive that you can receive, because it's complex. But to start with, let me say that folate is an essential B vitamin, and it's found in lots of wholesome foods that also have lots of other healthy things in them, things like the deep green vegetables and nuts and seeds. And liver is a fantastic
some
source.
Whole grains.
Whole grains, yes. Mm-hmm. Liver and meat. So many different foods have folate in them. And so we should be getting plenty of folate in our diet. You know, we eat, mm-hmm. Americans eat well in general. I mean, they have access to these foods. There's a question in my mind as to why, but the U.S. government started to get interested in the concept of adding folic acid to, making it obligatory to add folic acid to wheat-based products, any that are sold in the country, to make that a law that it has to be in there, folic acid. And they did some studies, and they were worried about spina bifida. They had seen the spina bifida rates were going up. That's a neural tube defect that's devastating if your child has it. It's extremely rare, but you certainly don't want it. And they had seen studies that had shown that folic acid could protect from spina bifida. So that was sort of the motivation to say, yes, we need to put this into the flour. And they managed to push that through the American regulator decision-making process. And so all of a sudden, everyone in America is getting this additional folic acid in whenever they eat flour-based foods.
Stephanie, do you know if it's also in the organic wheat as well?
It's an excellent question, and I've been looking at the ingredients when mm-hmm. I buy bread, and I love it when I buy the bread that have very few ingredients, and there's no folic acid in the ingredients, so I don't mm-hmm. know how they get by with that mm-hmm. with respect to the regulation,
right?
But I think they don't.
And in terms of prenatal care, it's been very important to supplement women in the beginning of the pregnancy with folic acid.
Right, and it's
because it prevents the neural tube defects.
Right, and they're making sure that they take it, and often I think they take it throughout the pregnancy. I don't know if that's true.
Yes, because women are encouraged to take prenatal pills, and it's 800 microgram dose in a prenatal pill. And it's interesting because tell us how much they're actually putting, like if you eat a cup of cereal, how much of folic acid is in a cup of cereal these days? I think it said like 400 micrograms.
It's a lot, right?
So it's a lot,
yeah.
I would think.
And if someone is eating a lot of cereal, they're mm-hmm. going to get an overdose, really, of folic acid. And the U.S. Mm-hmm. didn't seem to be worried about that at all. Now, I should say that Europe, the U.S. has put a lot of pressure on Europe to try to get them to also adopt this policy, and they have refused. And there's been some frustration on the part of the U.S. as to why the Europeans don't want to do it. But I think the Europeans have done better research than we've done, and they're worried about the consequences of too much. And so this is something we don't seem to think of. I mean, we seem to think more something is good, more of it's better. But the other problem is that folic acid and folate are not the same thing. And this is a really serious problem. And at first, even I didn't really appreciate the significance of that.
So folate is in the natural form in vegetables and liver, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and folic acid is a synthetic form. It's not a natural molecule. It's not found in nature. And furthermore, and this is the really surprising part, it takes a lot of effort on the part of the liver. I mean, so the body can turn it into the right form, but it takes a tremendous amount of stress on the liver to do that, because it starts out being oxidized and it's missing a methyl group. And the liver, in order to reduce it, in order to add that methyl group, is going to lose critical resources that could be scarce.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the resources that it's losing that could be scarce are also known to be depleted by glyphosate. So they're already scarce, and the folic acid makes them scarcer. So it works synergistically with glyphosate to cause harm to the liver, and glyphosate really causes harm to the liver. That's a huge part of glyphosate's problems in human physiology.
And we also have our other environmental toxins that the liver's trying to keep up with in the body, right?
That's right. And, of course, I've talked about this before, but glyphosate disrupts cytochrome P450 enzymes, which are really crucial in the liver.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they do is detoxify many of these other toxic chemicals. So when there's glyphosate, those other chemicals cannot be broken down, and they end up sticking around and causing a lot more harm.
So so the folic acid, because it's a synthetic form, it has to be broken down and reduced in the liver.
Right, it has to be modified so before it can be used, and that modification is going to sort of cost brownie points for the liver so that it can't do other things. In fact, it ends up with oxidized glutathione as a consequence, and that's something that's associated with autism and is a serious problem, because glutathione is a very important antioxidant, but when mm-hmm. it's oxidized, it's useless as an antioxidant. So you're losing your glutathione capability as a consequence of this folic acid. And glutathione is a sulfur-containing molecule, and I've talked a lot about sulfur in the past, because sulfur is a key, really important nutrient that's deficient in the modern world. Many people are suffering from a sulfur deficiency, which is going to mean reduced glutathione, inadequate supplies of glutathione, and then the wrong form of glutathione, because you've got to do that in order to make the folic acid work. So you end up costing other important molecules get burned out, in a sense, in order to make the folic acid work. And what can happen if you have huge amounts of folic acid, which people are doing because they're taking supplements, they're eating bread, you know, they're getting way too much.
Mm-hmm.
The liver can say, well, look, I'm just not going to do this. It's too hard. I've got other things I need to do that are more important. I'll let that go. And this is what actually happens. The folic acid ends up in the blood as folic acid. And that's a totally unnatural molecule. And it has consequences in the blood in terms of impairing the blood's ability to relax the blood vessels. So you end up with constricted blood vessels, which will have a problem delivering oxygen because there's an inhibited blood flow. So you can get inadequate oxygen to the brain, which again is connected to autism, because autism, part of what characterizes autism is a kind of a low-grade swelling in the brain, something called encephalopathy,
mm-hmm.
Chronic low-grade encephalopathy that's a consequence of low oxygen supply to the brain. So the folic acid could be contributing to that. And on top of that, folic acid binds tightly to the receptors for folate. So in the brain, there's a condition called cerebral folate deficiency syndrome, which is something that many autistic kids have.
Mm-hmm.
And what this means is they've got plenty of folate in the blood. When you measure their blood, it's fine. But when you look in their cerebral spinal fluid, it's low. And the reason is because the brain's not willing to take it up. The brain is unable. So the folate is, in a sense, unable to get past the blood-brain barrier. And there are hypotheses that the reason for this could be that the folic acid is binding to the folate receptors and
mm-hmm.
getting in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not useful as folic acid, but it binds, and then the folate is blocked. And so I think this excess folic acid, ironically, can end up producing the same symptoms that you would expect with folate deficiency.
That's very interesting. And so when you have, you were saying when you have folic acid in excess, it's going to cause oxidation of the glutathione.
Yes.
And also, you're going to have a lot more in the bloodstream. And then you're saying it's going to get to the brain and get into the receptors.
Yes.
Where folate should be able to get in receptors, but it can't because the folic acid is there.
Right, right. So you end up with a very big imbalance between folic acid and folate, which, of course, any amount of folic acid is not normal in the blood because it's not a normal molecule.
So, you know, that because pregnancy is such a crucial period, especially in terms of development of autism or, you know, a child being predisposed, and there's all of this supplementation of, you know, at least 800 micrograms of folic acid in a prenatal pill, but often people may be taking more a day as well. And they say that the best time to prevent neural tube defects is really in the first trimester.
Right. And even shortly before you get pregnant, and then in just those first few weeks after you're pregnant, that's a time when you really want to make sure you have enough folate. But even then, I don't think folic acid is a good solution for that.
And usually, most women don't even realize that they're pregnant at that point, and they start taking the folic acid later if they, you know about it or are having prenatal care.
But, you know, of course, I don't think you should be taking folic acid under any circumstances. And it is possible to take folinic acid, which is a much healthier form of the vitamin to take. But, of course, I would recommend that you get your folate supplies from food. And eating foods that are rich in folate is perfectly fine. You know, there's no problem there because those foods, the other thing is that those foods have so many other nutrients in them that go with folate. And this is one of the things that I feel in general about supplements with vitamins and minerals is that, you know, people have this concept, I'll just pop a pill and I'll get a plentiful supply of X, whereas in fact, all of these things come in context. So when you eat a whole food, it has a lot of nutrients in it, one of which is X. And if you just take X, your body's not prepared to deal with it correctly because the rest of the stuff isn't there. Everything needs to be in context, which is why you want to eat whole foods.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of pregnancy and, you know, excess folic acid throughout the pregnancy from the prenatal pill and also from ingesting wheat products like pasta and bread, do you know have you read anything about whether folic acid passes the placenta? To the placenta?
I think it does, and in fact, I think it interferes with folate supply to the placenta, to the infant.
Mm-hmm.
It'll get in the way there just as it gets in the way in the brain. It's sort of similar, like the placental barrier is similar to the brain barrier, and so the folic acid can disrupt the supply of folate to the fetus as well.
Mm-hmm.
Same
and
process.
And in addition, if that person is not eating an exclusive organic diet, then we know that they're ingesting glyphosate.
Yes, and that's huge, actually. And, of course, the wheat, and I've talked about this before, the wheat is often sprayed with glyphosate right before the harvest, using it as a desiccant, which means that the glyphosate's getting into the wheat products and into the bread. So you're eating your folic acid with glyphosate. And so the glyphosate is going to work, as I said, synergistically with the folic acid to cause harm to the liver. Worse than that, glyphosate disrupts the synthesis of folate. So, in fact, our gut microbes are a great source of folate supply. Even outside of getting it from your food, you can get it from your gut microbes. They can make it for you. But they make it using the shikimate pathway, which is the pathway that glyphosate disrupts. So I think that, in fact, spina bifida was going up. It was starting to go up when they were getting concerned and they thought they should put this folic acid into the food supply. My suspicion is that it was going up as a consequence of increased exposure to glyphosate at that time, because that was right when they were introducing these GMO Roundup Ready crops. And so what they did succeed in doing, I think, is preventing a signal from getting through that would have shown increasing instances of spina bifida, which would have been very obvious. You know, it would have been very easy to track that.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone would have wanted to look into why is this happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened was they avoided that. So it saved. It actually didn't go down nearly as much as you might have expected given the folic acid, but it went down enough for it not to be on the radar screen anymore. So they sort of achieved, I think, a goal that I believe might have even been a goal, and I can't prove this, which is to mask the effect of glyphosate.
Mm-hmm.
Because anyone who knows glyphosate, knows shikimate pathway, knows bacteria produce folate as a product of the shikimate pathway. It doesn't take a genius to figure out there's going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so the glyphosate is killing the bacteria, the right. beneficial bacteria, which is so crucial.
It's absolutely crucial. That is like the huge, huge elephant in the room with respect to what glyphosate does to your health. And one of the things that's happening now is that so many researchers are getting interested in studying the gut microbiome because mm-hmm. more and more people are realizing how much they do for us as a consequence of how much they're not doing now because they're being disrupted. And most researchers aren't really aware that glyphosate is a huge factor in that disruption. There are other things, of course, but glyphosate is huge. It's a patented antimicrobial agent. It's been shown to preferentially kill the beneficial microbes. So you get an overgrowth of the pathogens, you get an inflammatory gut, and then you get an immune response that causes all kinds of problems with the gut that then lead into problems with the liver.
Yeah, let's say a person is, you know, regularly or semi-regularly eating some kind of chicken or beef that's factory farm, that's mm-hmm. regular commercial beef that you buy in any store, and they're going to get the glyphosate from the GMO grains that the mm-hmm. animal is being fed,
right.
and the antibiotics
right, exactly.
that go into the animal. So then
that's right.
you have, you know, both ways of having an antibacterial effect.
Right, and the other thing that has been discovered recently and really shown very clearly in several papers now is that a low-dose exposure to one antibiotic allows those pathogens to develop resistance to multiple antibiotics. It's really quite smart on the part of the pathogens that once they see this low dose of an antibiotic, they develop skills that it's sort of like learning skills that then when they see a different antibiotic, they can quickly become resistant. And so we've got today huge problems in the hospital with multiple antibiotic resistant mm-hmm. various kinds of pathogens like C. difficile, C. diff, and you know Staph aureus mm-hmm. and
Pseudomonas
aeruginosa. Pseudomonas, by the way, is one of the very few microbes that can metabolize glyphosate, and I think that's a reason why it's becoming so prevalent.
So it doesn't kill.
It doesn't kill Pseudomonas. It's happy to even make use of glyphosate. It can use the phosphate and glyphosate for its own purposes.
And it is almost bottom of the hour, and you're listening to Health Talk, and with Dr. Donna Kaplan. Hi, Donna.
Hi, Cousin Rich.
Yeah, you look great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You too.
Have you been down to Secret Beach recently?
Not recently.
Oh, it's been so beautiful.
Has it?
Yeah, we were down there, and I kept thinking,
so
I'm going up
gorgeous.
Into Dr. Donna. And our guest this afternoon, always good to see you, Dr. Stephanie Seneff.
Definitely. Always
Absolutely.
Happy to be here.
Okay. So let's continue.
Okay, and we're also available for phone calls.
You ready for calls? 826-7771. And toll-free 866-275-1112. And we'll put you on the air with your questions. Thank you.
So, anything else you want to say about folic acid? Or should we go into...
I would actually like to mention vitamin D because it's a similar story.
Yeah.
And I think it's very interesting. And I'm very concerned right now about the massive policy of vitamin D supplementation. Huge numbers of people are popping vitamin D supplements these days. And there's become an awareness that we have a massive problem with vitamin D deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't enough of a question as to why this is suddenly happening. To me, it's very clear why it's happening. And again, it goes right back to glyphosate, because glyphosate disrupts the cytochrome P450 enzymes. I mentioned that earlier.
In the liver.
And vitamin D is activated in the liver using exactly those same enzymes that glyphosate disrupts. So it seems clear to me, it seems logical, that your vitamin D is not going to get activated. It's the activated form that's measured, and that's what's being shown to be reduced. And so the solution is not to just bombard the liver with tons of vitamin D, because actually what that will do, it's going to force the vitamin D to have to activate all of that, to force the liver to mm-hmm. have to activate all of that excess vitamin D using impaired enzymes. And those same enzymes have other important roles to play. They need to activate, they need to prepare the bile acids for export. So they get distracted by this busy project of activating all this excess vitamin D, which prevents them from, which even further impedes them in their other sort of more important job to make sure the bile acids are flowing. So the excess vitamin D, it seems to me, is going to, again, make the liver problem worse than it would have been without the excess vitamin D.
Right.
And we have a a caller on the air? Good afternoon.
Aloha, Cousin Rich, Dr. Stephanie, Dr. Donna.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Thank you for this important information. I especially appreciate your emphasizing the context in which one absorbs or, you know, takes these different vitamins. And so I think all this research has indicated that, you know, in the whole food package, it's not just the individual elements of which might be found in a vitamin or even a synthetic vitamin or a regular vitamin pill, but it's the context, it's the whole package that seems to really benefit health.
Absolutely.
So I've switched to like for 6 months a year, like I just had a giant sandwich with my own homemade hummus with white beans, so I get plenty of folate, and then I get the free avocados for 6 months a year, so I had a giant avocado, plus the kale and the red cabbage and red onions, and then just watch out for big trucks, right?
Right.
So, yeah, the main thing I've been struggling with is this role, and it has nothing to do, of course, with folate, because folate's a vitamin, but this issue of, you know, fatty acid in terms of, you know, the absorption of the minerals, you know, in one's diet. Do you have anything to say about that?
What kind of acid?
Fatty acid.
Fatty acid.
How do you spell that?
Well, fatty acid, of course, is the entity, the item which coats all grains, nuts, and seeds. So I've been
phytate is a chelator. Yes, it's going to disrupt mineral.
So what I do
absorption.
Is I soak for several. Now I've been soaking because I went to the Dr. Weston Price website and reviewed his comments or the website's comments. So I've been soaking all my. You know, so I got a ton of like white northern beads, so I figure, hey, I'm going to try to make the hummus out of that instead of the chickpea, and it works really good.
Uh-huh.
And I found out, oh, it's really high also in calcium. But anyway, the main thing is they advocate soaking all these things for multiple days, and I soak them with black lava with the charcoal added. So, I mean, the main thing is, like, I'm trying to, like, trying to get rid of as much of the fatty acid.
Right.
But it seems to me there's been, like, a tremendous discussion as to, well, fatty acid is both a nutrient and an anti-nutrient, but as I read the literature, it seems that you know, it's okay to consume the fatty acid, but if it's binding these minerals,
right,
then, you know, that's going to get in the way of the proper absorption of the minerals, and therefore the longer you can mitigate the negative aspect of fatty acid. But I'm totally into like the natural way.
Yeah, I think soaking really is helpful, especially nuts and seeds, and if you do your grains as well. So
yeah, well
that,
I you
I think
know
that's
I
great.
I just think that the beans plus my peanuts and then the avocado, that is a tremendous source of the folate for me.
What time is lunch?
I wish you were here, cousin.
Well, thanks. Yeah.
Kill sandwich.
All right.
Thank
well,
you,
thank you
thank
so
you.
Much.
Okay. So we were talking about vitamin D.
Yes.
And that affecting what the liver has to do.
Right.
And let's just mention there's the vitamin D2, which
yes.
is. They put in milk and orange juice and
right.
even almond milk and
I know.
Coconut milk and everything.
And it's all over the mainstream TV, vitamin D.
Right, right. I know. It's another one. It's actually similar to folic acid in the sense of the government getting obsessed with sort of putting it everywhere. I think they recognize there's a problem. Same thing. I think there's a lot of parallels between the folate and the vitamin D. Because the government recognizes there's a problem. They don't understand what's causing it, whereas I think what's causing it is glyphosate. And then the solution is to get rid of the glyphosate, but they're not thinking that at all. They're thinking we'll just you know, swamp everybody with so much opportunity to get vitamin D and to get folic acid that we'll just, you know, get rid of these deficiencies. And it doesn't work that way because you end up overtaxing the liver with tasks that are not useful
mm-hmm.
and and then disrupting what else the liver needs to do and causing toxicity in the liver. So the too much of a good thing is not a good thing, especially when it isn't really natural, because the folic acid is not natural and the D2 is not natural. What you get when you get sun exposure to the skin is vitamin D3, and there's a big difference between D3 and D2 in terms of their effects on your health.
So most people are supplementing with D3 in terms of, you know, taking it as a supplement.
Mm.
Is that it's not affecting the liver as much?
Right. No, it's still affecting the liver because the liver still has to be distracted by activating it. And also, I think, so what I'm feeling is that if you do have, I mean, I actually have an idea about how vitamin D works, and in fact how hormones work in general. Vitamin D is basically a hormone, and I see vitamin D as being a probe that the system uses to check out to see if everything's a go, like if things are, the system is healthy. So when you think about you get skin exposure to the sun, if your skin is able to produce vitamin D, that's a checkpoint. It says, okay, you've got plenty of cholesterol, because vitamin D is produced from cholesterol in the skin.
Right.
So that's saying, okay, good, we've got cholesterol in the skin, we're able to make vitamin D. It's shipped to the liver. I mean, vitamin D really jumps through hoops to get to the point where it's actually useful in terms of being a hormone. So the cells, the receptors don't respond to the vitamin D that's produced in the skin. It has to go to the liver, has to get activated by the liver using these CYP enzymes that get disrupted by all kinds of poisons, one of which is glyphosate. Aluminum, for example, disrupts the CYP enzymes. So what the vitamin D is doing is saying, oh, great, the CYP enzymes are working in the liver because it's becoming activated. That activated vitamin D goes then to the kidney, and the kidney activates it again in a second step to produce this 1,25 hydroxy vitamin D. And that's the one that's actually the hormone that actually the receptors respond to.
Mm-hmm.
So what that is telling the cell, I'm a cell in the body, I'm receiving the signal from this doubly activated vitamin D. It's telling me, check, we've got cholesterol, you know, cholesterol's working in the skin, sunlight's working, the enzymes that make vitamin D are working, the liver's healthy, the kidneys are healthy, you're good to go with your program, go ahead with business as usual.
Mm-hmm.
But if you sort of jam huge amounts of vitamin D through that system, then you get sufficient amount of activated vitamin D to deceive the cells into thinking that the enzymes are okay when they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And then the cells act recklessly because they're told the wrong message. So I think that can really cause trouble. Excess amounts of oral vitamin D in the presence of damaged CYP enzymes.
Right. And so many people have compromised livers.
Right. The liver damage is just amazing. I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And also, you know, I would say every adult has some level of adrenal fatigue.
Yes.
And that will also affect the liver's function as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely, right.
So you can't just give that person all the vitamins and minerals that they need because it would overwhelm.
Yeah, you really have to think about the liver. If it's not mm-hmm. healthy, it can't handle that load.
Right.
Yeah.
Huh.
My Chinese physician would say the liver is the general, sending out its troops. We had a listener who has two questions.
Okay.
Is there a blood test for
glyphosate?
Glyphosate. And also, sulfur, what amount for a male, and where to get the source of that sulfur?
Okay. Yeah, well, so first of all, it's actually really hard to test for glyphosate. You can test for glyphosate in the urine. And there are increasing pressures among consumers to want to do that. And so there's mm-hmm. sites are becoming available really only recently. All of a sudden, they're getting these requests to test for glyphosate. And so they're starting to offer that service at a few places in the United States. And you can find out where if you go to the website of Moms Across America. They have a pointer to a place where you can send your urine to get it tested for glyphosate. And even they offer a discount if you do it through them.
Oh, that's great. So no blood test yet that you know
yeah,
of?
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that a researcher could measure the glyphosate in the
mm-hmm.
blood of an animal they're studying, but no one's doing that
mm-hmm.
routinely. I mean, people are not yet aware. The mainstream's not yet aware that glyphosate's even a problem, so no one's thinking in terms of measuring it.
Mm-hmm.
Very few people are thinking. I think more and more people are as this message gets out. But
I know I've read articles about measuring baby neonate cord blood for the BT
yes.
toxin.
In fact, they've found all kinds of toxins in cord blood. mm-hmm. incredible numbers of different toxins. And they haven't measured for glyphosate because they just didn't think it was a toxin. Mm-hmm. You know,
but the
just,
BT toxin, which is...
Yes, absolutely, the BT, that's right.
From GMO
which is the
corn.
Other GMO. Yeah, the, so the GMOs that are really popular either have this resistance to pesticides, of which glyphosate's the biggest example, or they produce a pesticide that, that the actual gene that's inserted from a bacterium is able to make a pesticide. And that's really scary, in my opinion, because you've got the gene to manufacture a pesticide built into your food.
Mm-hmm. Very scary. So, Moms Across America, there's a link for testing the urine.
Uh-huh.
For glyphosate. And the other question, what was the other question?
Sulfur.
Sulfur.
For a male?
Sulfur.
Yes.
How much and the source?
Right. I mean, I advocate eating foods that are rich in sulfur, and there are, there's a bunch of things. Onions and garlic are good choices among vegetables, and also the cruciferous vegetables like broccoli and cauliflower, mm-hmm. Brussels sprouts, kale.
And yolks.
Egg yolks are great. Egg yolks are fabulous for sulfur, and they have all kinds of other really good nutrients as well. So I really advocate eating eggs, of course, organic. Everything should be organic. And then, again, liver and meat and seafood. Seafood is a really good source of sulfur as well. In terms of, there's several supplements that contain sulfur. A popular one is MSM, methyl sulfonyl methane. And then L-lipoic acid contains sulfur. There's a, I want to say, well, glutathione, obviously, and acetylcysteine,
mm-hmm.
And acetylmethionine, I guess it is, that you take. That you have to make sure that you have these modified forms of these sulfur-containing amino acids. And then glucosamine sulfate and chondroitin sulfate. Those are also possibilities. I like soaking in Epsom salt baths.
Epsom salt baths.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What does sulfur do in your body, doctor?
Oh, a tremendous number of things, and really underappreciated, particularly in the form of sulfate. And what I've come to realize is that it's extremely hard for the body to make sure there's enough sulfate distributed everywhere throughout the tissues, and particularly in the blood vessels for the red blood cells and also lining the blood vessels, especially the capillaries. If there isn't enough sulfate, they're sort of sprinkled with sulfate everywhere in the capillary, and that sulfate plays a really important role in making sure that the red blood cell can scoot through the capillary without getting stuck. And it also creates, we believe it creates actually an electrical circuit that actually supplies electricity to the cells. I'm working on that theory with some smart folks that I'm collaborating with.
Mm-hmm.
I think electricity in the body is really important and really broken these days. And I think it's broken in large part because of this insufficient sulfate supply. I just published a paper together with these smart collaborators that I've been working with, arguing that cholesterol sulfate deficiency is the primary cause of heart disease. And so it's a complete backwards from what they're saying, because they're saying it's too much cholesterol, and they give you a statin drug to try to reduce your cholesterol supply, which is the exact wrong thing to do. And what happens is that the statin drug interferes with your plaque's ability to deliver cholesterol to the heart because it doesn't supply the cholesterol. But the heart then becomes so deficient in cholesterol and sulfate that it just basically collapses. And so you get, you know, all these valve problems. You get heart failure. You get, you know, right ventricular hyperplasia, right? I lost that word there for a moment. And you get arrhythmias, you know, all these different problems in your heart come as a consequence of the lack of supply of cholesterol sulfate to the heart.
Yeah, and I think we'll maybe talk more about that in August.
Yeah, yeah. I'd like to do a whole show on that, because that's a really interesting topic.
That would be great. And if people want to look at that that paper, they go to your website? Or?
Yes, I just posted it. It's actually the top one in the list under papers.
Oh,
so my website site is organized under different topics, and I think fairly close to the top there's a whole bunch of papers that I've published, maybe 20 papers that I've published recently with collaborators, and I think the very first one in that list is this new paper. It just came out, actually, just a few days ago.
And what is your website, please?
People, http://people.csail.mit.edu/SENEFF
Thank you.
Thank you.
And probably if someone just looked up Dr. Seneff, they could get to your website?
I think so. I think my last name is sufficiently unusual that you'd probably find stuff on me through that, just typing that name.
So, very interesting. So, we need to have all the steps available to create vitamin D3 from the sun.
Yes.
And the liver has to be functioning, and the kidney has to be functioning. So, how does that, again, compare to taking a vitamin D3 supplement?
Yeah, well, of course, first of all, if you're taking a supplement, even if you were eating food that naturally contained vitamin D3, it would also naturally contain things like cholesterol sulfate, you know, other nutrients, again, this contextualization, so that it would be telling the cells something that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Because part of what vitamin D is telling the cells is that these things are available, these other things. And so when you just take vitamin D in isolation, the liver still is stuck with having to activate it because it's just going to go in and it's going to respond. It's going to jam the signal for the other things that the liver needs to activate with those same enzymes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's disruptive. And then, of course, it does get through and therefore it lies because there's too much of it. And the cells get deceived into thinking that the liver is healthy when it's not.
So, do you want to talk about, I know we have a lot of things we can talk about. We can talk about other minerals like manganese and iron and how that relates to glyphosate and a little bit more about autism. So what would you...
You have a question?
Yes. The listener asked a very interesting question. She was wondering, water... Not tap water, but spring water, not purified water. The importance of water.
Right.
And
spring
body
water
for
I
all
think.
This. Yeah.
Right. Spring water should be very, very good. And in fact, of course, water comes in all kinds of different shapes and sizes. And it's really unfortunate today that there's so many toxins in the water supply that, and so a lot of people do filter the water to get those things out. But in filtering it, you also remove things like sulfur. So you end up with, water could be a good source of sulfur, actually. And I think some of the parts of the world where people are really healthy, often you find that it's correlated with a place where there's lots of sulfur, like there's lots of basalt rock.
Yeah.
And they're getting that sulfur naturally in their water supply.
Mm-hmm.
But when you filter it, you take that out. So as a consequence of having to remove those toxic chemicals, you also remove important minerals and make the water less healthy in that respect. So you really get stuck when you have those toxic chemicals in the water.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you can't just trust spring water unless you really know the source.
I know, that's the thing, because there's so many toxins out there in the environment, you just don't know. And, you know, it's very difficult to be able to trust any water today in this country because there's so much out there that could be contaminating it.
Yeah, and some of the corporations, they're just filling it from tap water.
Right.
So anything else about water that you wanted to mention?
No, I think we...
Okay. Very good.
That was a listener who requested that we put your website on our link at KKCR.
Yeah.
So I'll ask that after the show. So
okay, good.
That'd
that
be
would
very
be great.
Good.
That'd
thank
be
you.
Great.
Yes,
thank
yes,
you.
Yes, yes.
That would be
good
great.
Good suggestion.
Because it's quite a long www.
I know. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I should get something simpler.
Hula Girl Seneff.
But luckily, my name is rare. I mean,
right,
you have to remember it, which
right.
is a problem, but that's easier than remembering the whole website, so you can just type Seneff.
That's S-E-N-E-F-F?
Yes,
right.
Two F's
okay.
at the end.
Right. Okay.
So, where should we go? We have a little less than 10 more minutes left. Do you want to?
Well, we could
talk
about manganese, right? You had mentioned
or
that.
Autism or both?
Yes, they go together very nicely.
Great.
Because manganese, and that was something that actually took me some time to find. As I said, I've been studying glyphosate really hard over the past anyway, ever since I figured it out, I've been studying glyphosate.
4 decades you're talking about.
No, just years.
4 years.
Only the last few years. I mean, it's kind of interesting that I didn't know about glyphosate until then, but it was hard to figure that out. Once I found out about it, I've just been studying it very intensely, and I didn't immediately figure out the manganese angle. I sort of knew manganese was one of the minerals that it would chelate, but I didn't really know what manganese does in the body. Most people probably don't, because you don't hear a lot about manganese. You don't have a lot about manganese supplements. It was because I saw a study that had come out from Denmark where they had looked at cows that were being fed GMO Roundup Ready feed, and they found in 8 different dairy farms that all the cows had extremely low manganese levels in their blood. So that was a huge hint that manganese might be a problem. So that caused me to go and see what are the enzymes, because these minerals typically activate different enzymes. And so it was quite amazing, because all of the roles that manganese plays in the body were things that fit right into the autism dysfunction. So, mm-hmm. for example, mitochondria in autism are often disrupted. The mitochondria are these organelles in the cell that provide energy to the cell, and they're often damaged in association with autism. And they are protected by an enzyme that depends on manganese. So if manganese is depleted, that's going to cause the mitochondria to have stress and to get damaged. So that makes sense. That fits well. Scary thing
and,
is...
And just an aside, the mitochondria is the major energy center.
Yes, the energy center for the cell. For all mm-hmm. cells. So that's huge. And then, of course, in the brain, that's going to be... And that's also connected to autism. I mean, to Alzheimer's as well. Mm-hmm. And then manganese is also needed to turn glutamate into glutamine. And glutamate is a neurotoxin that's also been implicated in autism. So usually the helper cells in the brain protect the brain from toxic glutamate by this conversion to glutamine, but they can't do that if there's not enough manganese. And that's another thing that had been connected to autism, was this excess glutamate in the brain. So all of a sudden, all these things were making sense with autism, that they could be explained simply by this manganese deficiency that was being induced by the glyphosate. So that was very satisfying. And Anthony Sampson and I wrote a whole paper on that, which is also on my website.
Yeah, it's an amazing paper. And it also talks about how glyphosate causes also too much manganese
yes.
in the liver, right?
That's right.
As well as deficiency.
That's right. And that's, again, because the bile acids can't flow. And usually the manganese is distributed by being bound to the bile acids. So when you block the bile flow, the manganese piles up to toxic levels in the liver, and then the liver unloads it by shipping it down the vagus nerve, and it ends up in the brainstem and causes damage there. And I think that's linked to ADHD and to Parkinson's disease.
And not necessarily Alzheimer's disease, but more
so
Parkinson's?
I think there's kind of a dichotomy between... In the elderly, there's Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, and in the young mm-hmm. kids, there's ADHD and autism, and I think they're kind of two sides of a coin, where there's a question of the balance between manganese and iron.
Mm-hmm.
So if manganese is too high, then that's going to be Parkinson's disease in the elderly or ADHD in the children, and if iron is too high, then that's the other pair, the Alzheimer's and the autism. But both of them are disrupted by glyphosate. The iron and the manganese are both disrupted.
The iron is as well.
Yes, and you get a lot of free iron in the blood, which is really toxic, because free iron is very reactive and it can cause a lot of oxidative damage in the
right,
blood.
Right, right. It's like a heavy metal.
Yes, but iron, of course, is also essential. So, you know, mm-hmm. and so people are finding, you know, you can't get the right amount of iron. You get iron overload, or you get iron deficiency. You can have both of them at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all because the iron is not being properly distributed. The body has developed a very sophisticated distribution system for iron, but glyphosate messes it up.
And, again, the mechanism that glyphosate messes up the iron?
Well, there's a couple of things. One of the most important ones is that it disrupts heme synthesis. So, you know, hemoglobin carries iron in the red blood cells.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the red blood cells are really stressed by glyphosate in lots of ways, and they end up dying prematurely. And they're releasing all that hemoglobin into the blood, which then gets broken down, and that iron is released. And that's how you're going to end up with free iron in the blood.
Mm. And probably excess bilirubin.
Yes, excess bilirubin is totally linked. In fact, I just reviewed a study this morning on fish. It was catfish, and they showed and they gave them sublethal doses, you know, small amounts of glyphosate, and they showed that they ended up with this excess bilirubin, and they suspected that it had to do with, you know, the red blood cell problem, and also the lack of bile flow, because then the bilirubin doesn't actually get cleared. So it ends up in the blood and bilirubin causes problems too. So there's lots of different pathways by which glyphosate messes up your health.
There was a question about probiotics.
Mm-hmm. Probiotics is really, I think, a very good idea, particularly if you've been eating a lot of glyphosate, if you've been eating a lot of fast food. Stop doing that. Go switch to an organic diet, and probably nurture your gut initially by taking these probiotics to get it back in shape. And then once I think you've managed to reset your gut biota, then you can probably stop, you know, taking the probiotics and just eat sort of live culture foods like yogurt and cheese.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And you can make cultured vegetables. You can.
I think that's a super thing to do.
And for people who can't eat dairy, you can make coconut kefir and all sorts of things.
There's a lot of fermentation out there, yeah.
Yeah, fermented foods, you know, and that's something that Western Price Foundation talks a lot about, and I think it's really important to be eating fermented foods.
Kombucha.
Yes, right.
Yeah, the gut bacteria are really becoming more and more known to really rule the health of the body.
Right, huh? I think it's easy for people to appreciate that when they realize they have gut problems, and then they can easily connect the dots.
And there's a big correlation with autism and the gut.
Yes, absolutely. Right? That was something I was aware of early on. In fact, I wrote a paper before I had figured out glyphosate in which I discussed how this disrupted gut microbes could lead to the brain problems, because there's this whole gut-brain axis, and we talked about this encephalopathy and all these different features. And when I was writing that paper, I was really frustrated because I couldn't explain why the gut microbes were disrupted. I could say once they were, you could understand how the rest would follow, but I didn't understand why they were. That was why I was so excited when I heard Don Huber talk, because he specifically said glyphosate messes them up. And then I was like, okay, there you go. You know, that's it.
Yeah, and it goes back to birth.
Yes, right.
What do we have, 35-40% C-section rate in this country? And so the baby passing through the vaginal canal is getting the beneficial bacteria.
Absolutely.
Right?
Oh, absolutely. And there have been studies that have shown that C-section babies don't get a good start with their gut microbes because they miss that step. It's very important.
So interesting. Well, if mom's been, eating regular commercial food and not organic, then she's getting that glyphosate. So it's,
I know.
Well, can really tie it to prenatal time.
And then, of course,
we have run out of time, ladies. So sorry. I know we could go on forever.
Can we just finish that thought real quick?
Yeah.
Rich, pretty please.
Real quick. Please.
I was
Thank
just
going
to say the soy-based formula, because the kids who eat the soy-based formula are really getting in trouble if it's not organic. It's going to be GMO Roundup Ready
also
soy.
Also has all these synthetic vitamins.
Yes, exactly.
So.
Exactly. They've got it's a huge problem eating the synthetic.
Well, this has been really fascinating.
Thank you for stopping by, Dr. Senna.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Nice
always enjoy this.
Yeah, please come back again.
I will.
Nice to see you, Donna.
Thank you, Cousin Rich.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go well,
Stephanie.
Everyone. One World Radio with my good friend Richard up next at Kauai Community Radio. You have a nice afternoon, ladies.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha.
When morning comes to Morgantown, the merchants roll their awnings down. The mill-